a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 153 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for May 2026. Not unusually for the month before WWDC, it's been a relatively quiet month in terms of Apple news, but there's still plenty for us to talk about, so let's get stuck in. Let's start with a few updates to stories we've talked about before. We now have confirmation that encrypted RCS is indeed coming to the Messages app. That came as part of iOS 26.5, which has support that Apple are labeling as beta. And don't expect it to just be available everywhere. It requires the carriers to come on board, and Apple have started with a few carriers in the US and Canada, and have promised a broader global rollout over the coming an amount of time. So expect more of us to have that option around the world as, you know, 2026 continues. We also have a little bit more evidence that the global RAM supply chain issues are continuing to bite as Apple culls more high-end Mac Mini and high-end Mac Studio configs. And then a little bit of better news for Apple's hardware, we have another little anecdote that gives more evidence that the MacBook Neo is achieving exactly what Apple hoped it would. I was one of many, many people to comment that this thing was really aimed at the education sector, and that would indeed appear to be working. We now have news that the Kansas City Public Schools are going all in on Apple. They are replacing a whole bunch of PCs and Chromebooks with MacBook Neos, which is augmenting their existing fleet of iPads and MacBook Airs, and will make the entire fleet Apple only. And finally, yet another setback for the impetulant tariffer, Donald Trump's rapidly cobbled together 10% universal tariff after his IEEPA tariffs were declared illegal, have been ruled to be illegal too. Now, this ruling hasn't gone all the way up to the Supreme Court like the last slap on the wrist about IEEPA did, so this one can be appealed. I haven't seen any news about it being appealed, but that is a possibility, and I don't think the door has closed on that yet, so we may well get another update from Trumplandia in next month's show. It's been a relatively quiet month in terms of Apple and regulators around the world. In fact, if anything, the biggest story is, the biggest two stories really, are some evidence that regulation, while it is slow and cumbersome and painful, isn't ineffective. With iOS 26.5, your users in the European Union are a little bit closer to having third-party accessories work nicer with iPhones. The APIs to enable AirPod-like quick pairing on third-party headphones are now released in public, so as hardware vendors adopt these APIs into their code, we can expect more and more high-end headphone brands to just work on iPhones. We are also getting rich watch notifications for third-party smartwatches, again, whenever the developers get around to implementing the APIs. But, you know, the whole of Europe is a big enough market that I would expect that to start happening. And to some extent, this is an opportunity for those vendors to put their money where their very shouty mouth has been, because they've been lobbying the EU to force Apple to do this. Well, the EU have forced Apple to do it, so over to you folks now. Similarly, Google and Apple have cooperated to make it easier to migrate from iPhone to Android. Again, these are things required under regulation in the EU and in other places around the world. And even where it isn't required, it's the kind of thing that Apple and Google are coming under strong pressure over, so it makes all the sense in the world that they would do this preemptively before they're forced to do it everywhere. But again, no regulatory pressure. I very, very much doubt this would have happened. Why would either company be motivated to do this? And finally, there is a little bit of news in terms of upcoming regulation. The EU are working to, well, on their next big regulation, which is on AI, which is not a bad thing to be thinking about in 2026. Apple have made a filing along with Google to say that these requirements are profoundly risky. Now, we also have, actually what's interesting is that Apple are backing Google up here, which is interesting because this is actually something that the European Commission are talking to Google about, but Apple are chiming in going, yeah, we agree. And in somewhat related news, we have Google has confirmed that AirDrop support is coming for a bunch of Samsung Galaxy phones. So this strange sort of unofficial, official support for Apple's technically closed protocol that they're under massive pressure from the EU to open up is opening further, and Apple remains silent on it. I'm going to be watching very, very carefully over the betas that come out after WWDC next month to see if all of a sudden the AirDrop protocol has developed some sort of new anti-Google features to lock them back out. If that doesn't happen with the release of the Apple OS 27 series, and I think we may have arrived in a world where AirDrop has become a kind of pseudo-standard used across the entire industry, which would certainly have advantages in terms of quick and easy sharing of stuff between people you're in physical proximity to. We shall see. Some legal stories to catch up on now. We have the antitrust case between the Department of Justice and Apple, or rather where the Department of Justice are suing Apple in the United States. A US court has given the thumbs up to the Hague Evidence Convention request we discussed Apple filing last month. That doesn't mean Apple get the documents they want from Samsung, but it does mean that they have crossed the first hurdle and now they are free to submit their request to Korea, where the South Korean courts will decide whether or not they are going to effectively force Samsung to comply. We shall see what happens over the coming weeks and months. Meanwhile, Apple has filed with the court in the United States in an attempt to force the US government to become a little bit more forthcoming during the discovery phase of their long, laborious trial. Apple have been asking for documents about the purchasing decisions of the US government. So there's lots of government agencies have chosen to purchase Apple products, which means there was a procurement process in those departments and there were pros and cons weighed up. And those decisions were made based on judgments about the relative quality of Apple's options and so forth. And what Apple wants in discovery is the documents where those decisions were made, because they are very, very likely to rather undermine the DOJ's quite flimsy case. Needless to say, the DOJ are not keen to hand them over, hence Apple's need to file a formal request with the judge to make them hand it over. Again, stay tuned to see what happens here. Meanwhile, in one of those rare cases where you don't really need to be a lawyer to figure out whether or not Apple made a boo-boo, Apple have settled the unfair or the deceptive advertising case against them over the Siri ads promising features that they simply failed to deliver on while trying to sell people iPhones. Were they 17s or not even been iPhone 16s back when this happened? I mean, they just, those products that those ads were pushing on the basis of how amazing Apple Intelligence would be, that was just fiction. That was absolute fiction, which is indeed deceptive advertising. So yeah, of course Apple have chosen to settle. This is a United States case, so if you live in the United States, you could be entitled to up to $95 from the $250 million settlement that has been agreed. And there are instructions from the Mac Observer in the show notes at let's-talk.ie where you can go about, you know, see how to go about putting in your claim. Jumping across the pond and hopping across the little island of Ireland, we arrive in the United Kingdom, where Apple have had a filing with a court there attempting to narrow down the scope of a $4.1 billion antitrust suit against them over iCloud. They haven't lost the case, but they have lost their request to have the case narrowed in scope, so the case shall continue to trial as it was originally filed. And then we jump even further across a large landmass to arrive on the subcontinent of India, where we have a small update from the seemingly endless battle between the Competition Commission of India, the CCI, and Apple. And I think the only way to get a summary here is to read this little excerpt from Apple Insider. In its antitrust investigation against Apple, the Competition Commission of India has been trying to get the company to submit audited statements for 2022 to 2024. The Delhi High Court has ordered Apple to hand over the financial information. However, as well as ordering Apple to, quote, fully cooperate, the court also told the CCI not to issue its ruling before July 15th. So my reading of this is that the court sort of halved the difference. Apple were looking to have the case pushed to the 12th of never. The CCI were looking to force Apple to... Basically, the CCI were looking to get their ruling out ASAP. And the court said, Apple, you do have to hand over the books, but no, CCI, you do have to wait on us until the middle of the summer before you can proceed any further. So a small win for Apple, probably a more substantial win for the CCI. Again, this long, long, long-running story is not done yet. Speaking of long-running stories, we have the Department of Justice's antitrust case against Google, which, despite the fact that this is an Apple show, not a Google show, is extremely relevant because of Apple's $20 billion search deal with Google over default search in Safari. We have now arrived at the point in this trial where Google can formally file their appeal of the original finding that they are illegal monopolists, and therefore they have done so, and that formal appeal makes a point of saying that Apple's deal with Google was acquired fair and square. Again, you know, we knew this was coming, not surprising, so this epically long case will continue for another while. It is now formally moving on to the next phase. And then finally, in news adjacent to legal cases, Apple have released their latest report on conflict minerals. It's the usual report where Apple explain who their various suppliers are and what they've done to make sure they're not using illegal conflict minerals or immoral conflict minerals. And what's particularly relevant here is that this report flatly contradicts two court cases that were filed in Europe last year by fairly major NGOs claiming that Apple were in fact ending up with very, very tainted raw materials, cobalt, I believe, from parts of Africa where there are horrible wars going on and really horrible exploitation of the local people. So those cases are filed in France and Belgium. So if this is true, what's in Apple's report, that is a strong contradiction of the claims that are being examined in those two countries' judicial systems. We shall see how all of this develops. We have some HR and acquisition news. First off, a little bit of HR news. The first union store, or the first Apple store in the United States to unionize, was in Towson. And strangely enough, as we reported last month, Apple have also decided that of the very, very, very few Apple stores they've ever closed, that one they're going to close. And the staff kind of feel they're being victimized a little bit here. They may or may not be correct. It may be the case that the store is just not profitable and Apple is making a completely normal decision. It is suspicious, to put it mildly. Of course, I can't know, and therefore I have no firm opinion. But what I can say is that the workers are not going away quietly into the night. They picketed their own store with big signs and things and made a bit of a stink. So, you know, they're continuing to fight what is probably a losing battle. jumping over to the more traditional aspects of HR, the one of the major Apple TV execs, their head of international development, is leaving Apple TV to start his own production company. This is Morgan Wandel, who actually has been with Apple TV before it was even launched to the public, so we didn't even know there was an Apple TV, and he was already working on Apple TV. He's not a sort of a front-of-house name we would have come across, but he was a busy man while he was with Apple TV, having worked to develop and produce some pretty major titles: Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, Tehran, Disclaimer, Masters of the Air, and New Look. So that's, you know, not an insubstantial portfolio. So obviously we wish him the best in his new venture, and it does sound like a little bit of a loss for Apple. Meanwhile, Apple have been busy acquiring things. The first acquisition to make the news in May was an acquisition of Patchflyer, which is a one-person German company that makes color grading plugins for Apple's Pro Tools. This looks like Creative Studio is going to get some more advanced color grading features. Definitely has a smell of acqui-hire to it. What also has a smell of acqui-hire to it is Apple's acquisition of another small company that specialise in creating virtual avatars. Sounds awfully like the Vision Pro personas might get a little bit of a makeover. Again, acqui-hire. We probably will never know exactly what has come of this, but don't be surprised if a year from now the personas get a nice tweak, because obviously nothing can happen. But, you know, this happened in May, WWDC is a few weeks from now. Of course, anything announced there can't be because of this, because of the lead time on software. But nonetheless, as time continues, I would imagine those personas are going to get some TLC. They certainly have new skills in-house to make that so. Quite a lot happening in Apple's services and original content this month. We have Apple do a press release every month about what's happening in Apple Arcade. I'm really pleased to see Apple Arcade getting this much TLC from Apple, so I keep sort of mentioning it on the show. But this month's one strikes me as an extra big one, because the very, very well-known children's cartoon character Bluey isn't just coming in a Bluey game, but there's a whole bunch, a multi-game crossover event, which definitely seems like big news. And in gaming-adjacent news, we have Vision Pro is getting some PC VR games streamed through it through something called the KR VR app, which again, for people who are into VR gaming, sounds interesting to me. Moving on then to Apple TV, another one of their very popular shows, The Studio, has become the most awarded new comedy show in history. The award that pushed it over the top was a rather prestigious international BAFTA. So the BAFTA is the British Academy of Film and Television Awards. So they have an international category in the same way the Oscars have an international category. So normally British, you know, creators are hoping to win something in the international Oscars category. Well, here we have the reverse. We have an American production winning something in the BAFTAs international category. They have done well. In one of the most bizarre award or potential awards, it's actually 12 nominations we're talking here, Schmigadoon is nominated for 12 Tony Awards. If you're wondering, Tony Awards, are they not music? They are. That's because although Schmigadoon the TV show is cancelled, Schmigadoon the musical on Broadway is actually quite successful and apparently very good. So good, it has 12 nominations for Tony Awards. So we shall see when the ceremony happens how that pans out for Apple, but they just, you know, they seem a good chance they'll get their first ever Tony Award, which is unusual. And finally, one other unusual award that's very Apple adjacent is that the Cannes Film Festival in France have a thing called the Cannes Lions, which is like the lions of the entertainment industry. And this year's Entertainment Person of the Year is a certain Eddie Q. Very unusual award for Apple to get, but there we go. We know Apple is putting a lot of effort into expanding their sport portfolio, and we also know that soccer has been one of the sports they have focused on initially, and it is a big summer for soccer with the FIFA World Cup being staged in North America. So Apple Sports app is gearing up for that. 90 more countries now have the Apple Sports app available to them because there is full coverage of the FIFA World Cup coming to that app. And of course, many, many, many countries all over the world have teams playing in the World Cup. And even if your national team didn't qualify, there are going to be neighbouring countries you care about that you're going to want to be watching. So Ireland is one of those 90 countries. The Irish football team is not in the World Cup this year, I don't think. I could be wrong, I don't really follow soccer, but I don't think they are. But of course, I'll get to follow my native Belgium to see how they're doing. And when the Belgians inevitably go out long before the Dutch, I'll get to enjoy my next door neighbours in language, the Dutch, hopefully do a little bit better. And if all else fails, I guess I might support the French. Or maybe the English, maybe. Anyway, I don't really watch soccer, but I do like to know what's going on. So I will, for the first time ever, be installing this app. Anyway, there are other things happening related to football. Apple had a podcast called After the Whistle. That it was a soccer-related podcast. It is coming back to cover the World Cup games. And then also related to soccer, this time the ASL, the American Soccer League, Apple TV made a fairly big deal about their first soccer match shot exclusively on iPhone's 17 Pro. And there were the headlines that caught my eye, because I'm a photographer, were that the wide camera shots exposed the limits of Apple's iPhone 17 Pro broadcast, and the commentary on the wide overhead shots wasn't great online. People are like, they look a bit pixelated and artifacty and a bit like they were shot on a phone. Which is obviously the that didn't go great part of the story, but actually, to be fair to Apple and to frankly continue to admire the amazing cameras on those iPhones 17 Pros, the other shots got really positive feedback because Apple were able to give very close, very low, very, very unusual points of view that were just absolutely impossible with a giant big traditional broadcast camera. So actually, on balance, the feedback was very positive. The one thing Apple could do with improving in their iPhone's 17 Pro would appear to be the CPU oomph powering the wide angle processing. There's a lot of pixels there with a lot of stuff going on, and when things were moving too fast, the phone wasn't keeping up. That's a solvable problem. That's part of the image pipeline. So I will be very curious to see if that gets some TLC next month at WWDC. Well, probably not at WWDC. That's probably one for even later in the summer when the iPhones 18 get announced. But anyway, I'll be curious to see if that feedback ends up reflected in new capabilities in our upcoming iPhones. Apple Music did something unusual. They shared an open letter to the music industry about basically music in the AI world, and they had the title was Keep Music Fair, and it was a very nuanced open letter, a wonderfully nuanced open letter. I have to say, this is a theme you're going to hear me say a few times in this month's news. Apple's approach to AI is neither it's amazing, it's brilliant, it'll replace all the humans, this will be the end of work, universal abundance, all this other nonsense, nor is it the sky is falling, the world is over, we're all doomed, we're all going to be unemployed. It's neither of those things. It's way more nuanced, and it's about AI as an empowerment tool to act as a force multiplier for humans. And that's what comes across in this open letter too. Apple very, very clearly distinguish between creatives using artificial intelligence as a new creative tool to enhance their human creativity, and AI slop. They will not be penalizing creative uses of the new technology. They will be penalizing AI slop. Personally, I think that is exactly the right way to handle our complex and evolving AI world. Apple Maps got some little tweaks. If you're in the United States and Canada, those tweaks were probably not what you think are positive. Suggested places have arrived in preparation for those suggested places containing ads in your two countries this summer. But in better news on this side of the pond, or indeed if any Americans are coming to Europe for their summer holidays, If you're going to Rome or Naples, you can get some better 3D views in your Apple Maps while you are over here. Enjoying nice espressos. Yeah, gelatos. Oh, I do love Italy. Delicious. Okay. And good weather too. Right, Apple Health. The Apple Watch and AirPods fitness features are expanding to new regions, specifically Italy, Romania, the Czech Republic, or Czechia, as I should properly be calling it, and Israel. Sleep apnea and hearing test features have arrived in India. And in related news, the heart rate feature in the AirPods Pro 3 has found a new home in the Strava app, which is an extremely popular app for running, cycling, etc. Small piece of news for the App Store. Apple have released their latest big press release touting how wonderful they are at fighting fraud and stuff. 2.2 billion in potential fraudulent transactions stopped in 2025. I always find these fascinating to read because it's one of the few times we get a little look under the hood into how much work it takes Apple to make the App Store go as well or as poorly as it does. I am of the opinion that the App Store really isn't the great place it could be. The whole point of a walled garden is it's supposed to be nice in here, and it sort of feels like we're not getting the benefit of our walled garden, but we are getting all of the side effects of our walled garden. But again, I have to remind myself that maybe I'm asking more than is humanly possible. And when you read through the detail of this report and you get to understand the scale of the thing, well, you do sort of find yourself begrudgingly respecting Apple more than you'd like to. Okay, I keep saying you. Wherever I've said you, I mean me. I find myself begrudgingly giving Apple more respect than I particularly want to because I don't like the way the App Store is run. But hey, you know this if you've been listening for a while. If you don't want to read Apple's massive big press release, although I personally find that fascinating to scan, Bleeping Computer give a good overview of the facty facts. I'll leave you with a little bit of analysis from reading Apple's actual press release, which Bleeping Computer didn't pick up on. Lots and lots and lots of mentions of AI, and again, nuanced. They peppered it in everywhere, and everywhere they peppered it in, it was about how AI is empowering their human reviewers. How, with the help of AI, Apple's reviewers are, etc. So it really is AI force multiplier, not AI human replacer. I imagine this is going to set a theme for the vibe of the new Siri and so forth we are all expecting in next month's WWDC. Car Key has gotten a big name buy-in that was announced some time ago, but it's finally actually happened. This is one of those ones where it's got high profile and is good to get these headlines out there, but the actual number of new vehicles that will have Car Key support is quite small because it's Porsche and it's their EV lineup, which is a subset of Porsche. But still, high profile sell, you know, gets the word out there. It might encourage other car makers to be as premium as Porsche. We shall see. Anyway, just a factoid. We have talked a lot about Apple Wallet continuing to get ever better, nice, secure, privacy-respecting ID documents in the Apple Wallet. Unfortunately, only in the United States. But if you live in one of those states, Arkansas specifically, you can now have your driver's license in your Apple Wallet. And then more products than Apple only do in the United States. We have Apple Savings. That was kind of trapped in the Wallet app, which meant that if you got rid of your iPhone and you still had some balance, you actually couldn't even see what your balance was. You didn't know how bad the problem was. Well, Apple have made that a little bit better. There is now a web interface that will let you access the documents. You can't really do anything in there other than access, you know, the statements and so forth. But it's a step forward. It's a significant step forward from zero ability outside the Wallet app to an ability to do some stuff outside the Wallet app. And obviously they can only add more features to this new portal. So probably a good thing for Apple Savings users. The Apple Card, we know, is in the middle of a big transition from one bank to another. So I was a little bit surprised to see Apple do a fairly high profile push to get people to sign up. Apple launches free AirPods Pro deal for new Apple Card customers. If you're tempted and you live in the United States, by all means give it a look, but I really do mean give it a look, because, according to Apple Insider, getting free AirPods Pro 3 sounds simple until the Apple Card fine print kicks in. None of it read as malicious or anything like that, but it's not quite the case that do nothing get free AirPods Pro 3, which I guess is also not unsurprising. So, you know, if you're interested in the card, check out the small print and see if you really do want some free AirPods Pro 3 in exchange for yet another credit card. We have just three main stories. We have a very unexpected twist in the Apple v. Epic case as our first main story. Then we have something I very rarely do, an unconfirmed report, but it's well-sourced and rather significant. Apple and Intel appear to have finalized a deal. And then finally, Apple had their annual event, or press release really, where they revealed, pre-announced really, details of what's coming up in the Apple OS 27 versions in terms of their accessibility features. So we'll have a little look at that as our third and last main story. That first main story then is the Apple v. Epic case. And the month started off as I expected, and had it continued like this, it would have simply been in the legal latest section as three little quick bullets. So, the first thing that happened was exactly what we thought was going to happen. Apple versus Epic fight could be put on hold again if Supreme Court sides with Apple, to quote Apple Insider. In a new filing viewed by Apple Insider, Apple has requested a stay on the mandate that would require it to reconvene with Epic in court and decide upon a new App Store commission for external purchases. It was previously granted a stay by the Circuit Court, but that stay was overturned after a complaint from Epic. So they had a stay, they lost the stay, and now they've gone to the very highest court saying, hey, how's about putting that stay back? Well, it didn't take long for the Supreme Court to reply back, and they went, nope. So Apple now had no choice but to start talking to Epic about some sort of a process for trying to agree fair and reasonable terms for extra links to external payment. So they actually succeeded in doing so. My summary of this is that the two companies have agreed the process by which they'll approach trying to come to an agreement. It's a bunch of steps and timelines for each side to do. You'll give us these documents, you'll give us so many days to digest them, we'll reply with this request from you, you'll have so many days to process it, and the ping pong, over and back with what you'll do and how long it'll take. And Apple Insider have done the math, and the way they cipher it, it could be 150 days or 5 months before the court schedules another meeting. If they go as short as possible, 150 days. If they go as long as possible, 5 months. Wait, is 150? No, 150 days is 5 months. Sorry. If they go as long as possible, this could be 5 months worth of stuff. I should really do math before I turn on the microphone. So that was all normal, as expected. And then things got a bit weird, because there was no court victory. There was nothing really that Epic got that Epic wanted, but out of the blue, big press releases, big media blitz, Fortnite returns to global app stores as Epic fights Apple, except for Australia. They're staying out of Australia because I think that court case might go somewhere soon. The headline Apple Insider put on it was, Epic Games declares Victory Royale month ahead of Apple case conclusion. I did a lot of reading on this to try to get my head around what on earth had happened here. This was weird. And for what seems like the umpteenth time this show, I'm going to quote Apple Insider. This is a real hat tip to Apple Insider, because I always read lots and lots of stories and then I only quote the ones that I think say it best. So I guess Apple Insider doing very well this month. Anyway, reading from Apple Insider again. Nothing has been decided and months of deliberations are still ahead. But Epic Games is taking a premature victory lap and re-releasing Fortnite globally, except in Australia. If you only listened to Epic CEO Tim Sweeney, you'd think that Epic versus Apple trial was already decided. In yet another marketing-style push, Apple is attempting to sway legislators around the world with a flashy ad campaign. If at this stage you've completely lost track of how we got to this bizarre situation, Cult of Mac have an excellent overview article that summarizes everything between then and now. For what it's worth, this looks and smells awfully like Epic capitulating to me. Apple expected that they could drag out the court cases longer than Epic could stand to be missing all of that juicy Apple device revenue. It would appear that Apple were correct and they have waited out Epic's less deep pockets. My take on it anyway. Maybe Epic will get something of what they want, but really, they've rather thrown in the towel, as best as I can tell, because there was no legal fight to justify this great big declaration of victory. Then, after that bit of weirdness, things carried on, because Apple didn't buy into any of this weirdness. Apple are continuing business as usual to fight like heck over this. So, Apple issued another appeal to the Supreme Court. So, They didn't succeed in stopping the what was eventually negotiated process, but that doesn't mean that there was no more questions the Supreme Court could answer, and there were no more ways the Supreme Court could come to Apple's rescue. They have filed a petition with the court. Again, I'm going to quote from Apple Insider. In the Supreme Court filing viewed by Apple Insider, Apple shares that the scope of the anti-steering injunction exceeds the district court's limits set by CASA. This is a previous case. It also argues that the injunction violation was issued in error due to suggesting it was violating the spirit of the law rather than the letter. Given the current makeup of the Supreme Court, given the way the CASA case fits into the idea of unitary executive and literalism that is in vogue on the court, I'm not sure Apple aren't going to prevail here. I'm pretty sure they shouldn't, but A, I'm not on the American Supreme Court, so it doesn't really matter what I think, and B, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not really sure why I bothered wasting your time with my opinion. But anyway, there it is. Second main story is our unusual one, where I am venturing into unconfirmed reporting. I minimise my doing of this on this show. As far as I'm concerned, news are things what happened, not things what somebody said might have happened, or things what somebody said we should trust them did happen. But there's an awful, awful, awful lot of smoke here, and I think it's probably because it's actually true. We may or may not hear about this at either WWDC, probably not, or at the launch event for the iPhones 18 later in the summer, or maybe not. We may never hear about it until there's some sort of a need to file something with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Okay, what is it that apparently probably happened? The Wall Street Journal are reporting that Apple and Intel have reached a deal to manufacture chips in the United States. So the Wall Street Journal is paywalled, so there is a link in the show notes if you are a subscriber, but I am going to hand over to the Mac Observer here and rely on their summary of the story I wasn't able to read. According to reporting from the Wall Street Journal, discussions between Apple and Intel continued for more than a year before both companies finalized a formal agreement in recent months. The report says Intel will manufacture chips based on Apple's own designs, similar to the role TSMC plays for current iPhone, iPad, and Mac processors. I know a lot about Intel because I am here in Ireland's Silicon Valley, just east of the city of Dublin, next to a little town called the Leixlip, where there is a giant big Intel plant. And Intel's fortunes have risen and fallen in the 3 decades or so I have lived here in Maynooth, and they're not doing the greatest at the moment, and the big, big, big change that the company is banking its future on is their abandonment of their long-held disdain for becoming, quote-unquote, just a foundry. So a foundry is someone who makes someone else's designs for them. Intel was braggadocious about the fact that they have the best chip designer, so why would they ever make chips to other people's inferior designs? How times have changed, because of course the A-series processors are running rings around anything Intel ever managed to ship for mobile. So, caving to the inevitable to avoid becoming bankrupt and irrelevant, Intel announced that they were starting to become a foundry, a traditional foundry like TSMC and others. And obviously, since Apple left them after their PC chips were junk and they didn't have any sort of a pipeline for mobile, Intel have been desperately begging Apple to come back. And some of the press releases and things and some of the statements from the CEOs over the years were just pathetic. Well, it would appear that very quietly, behind the scenes, they have managed to make it so. If you're interested in a nice summary of the long history between Apple and Intel, I'm going to link to the Apple Insider story, Intel Inside and Out, Apple's four-decade-long relationship. And one final piece of news related to this. This is another unconfirmed report, not from the Wall Street Journal, but from the rather reputable analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. He's not always right, but he's very, very often right, and I would say he very, very rarely posts absolute nonsense. So Ming-Chi Kuo says that Intel has started production. Now, this is not production for the purpose of them becoming immediately, you know, a production run. It's a test run to basically prove their foundry capabilities. So it's test chips for Apple to then validate, and if the test goes well, they will be ramping up production. So if that is true, for a start, that's just good extra confirmation that there is some sort of a deal finalized. So interesting. In related news, because obviously this would be not in Intel's factory here in Ireland, this would be happening in Intel's factory in the United States to help reshore more of Apple's manufacturing. And in very much related news, Apple's US chip plan gains steam thanks to $20 billion TSMC investment. That is not Apple investing $20 billion into TSMC, that is TSMC investing $20 billion into their US production facilities, which are busy making chips for Apple, or busy preparing to make chips for Apple. Our third and final main story, then, is that Apple have done what Apple always do in the run-up to World Accessibility Day, and they have pre-announced the OS 28 features related to accessibility. And there is a very big focus on Apple Intelligence. In fact, Apple's own press release is entitled, "Apple Unveils New Accessibility Features and Updates Powered by Apple Intelligence." And really, you can summarize the whole thing by saying that places where it would just be gosh darn easier to talk to your phone are apparently going to let you do just that. Places where LLM's ability to quote-unquote interpret images and stuff would be gosh darn helpful, you're going to get that. So you can, you know, when you're blind and you can't see an image, instead of relying on the alt text, you can ask Apple Intelligence to describe it for you, and in theory, this should be very good, probably better at it than typical alt text. And as well as just asking improved Siri to dictate stuff for you, you will be able to ask Siri to do things on your phone, to click buttons, to control the screen, basically. You'll also be able to ask it to describe the screen for you. So there has been for a long time a coordinate system for people who are somehow motor impaired and can't tap the screen to use the coordinate system to tell the iPhone or the iPad to click on the button in the lower right quadrant or whatever. I think it was a number-based grid. But now, if this works as announced, you'll be able to describe in plain English what you want to do. Click on that button in the lower right. Select that third checkbox on the list. Those kind of human things. So again, these are extremely intelligent ways to use the features that large language models are inherently good at. And so for the most part, this is about utilizing large language models for exactly their strengths, which really should be something Apple can do, especially since we know they have a deal with Google so that their large language model is a private custom version of Gemini. So, you know, we know what Gemini can do. So this seems realistic. I heard a lot of people getting extremely nervous about Apple pre-announcing more AI-based features. Have they learned nothing? They were literally just successfully sued, after all. But I don't think this is that. For a start, Apple always pre-announce these accessibility features. And what they're announcing doesn't sound, wow, amazing, no one's done this before, like, what time is my mom's plane landing? But these are utterly realistic announcements. These are the kind of announcements that Apple should be capable of delivering in 2026. So I actually think that these are likely to be accurate announcements of what's coming, as opposed to 2 years ago's WWDC debacle. I can't prove that, of course, only time will tell. An interesting extra little one that doesn't quite fall into the categories of things I've described is eye-controlled wheelchair support in Vision Pro. So if you're in a Vision Pro and in a wheelchair, you can basically use your eyes to navigate your actual physical motorized wheelchair around the actual planet. That sounds very sci-fi, very futuristic, and very cool. And given the amazing quality of the eye tracking in Vision OS, again, well, this has a mild sci-fi feel to it with my technologist. You know, I am a trained computer scientist, after all. Nothing about this seems beyond the bounds of what should be possible in 2026, given the current state of technology. Just a really cool application of features, hardware features that we already know exist, tied to a very clever software implementation. So I'm quite interested to see this. I think this all sounds very promising. And in related news, last year, a company called Hakua released a grip for the iPhone that was technically an accessibility device. It was for people with limited muscle control to be able to securely hold on to their iPhones. It connected over MagSafe. It was a spectacularly popular product with lots and lots of people. It was one of those real curb cut effect things, technically designed for a specific subset of people to make their life easier, but actually makes everyone's life easier to have a dual purpose stand and really easy to hold on to grip for an iPhone. They were darn popular. They are back. And they're available, not in limited supply anymore, but just available and at a lower price. In Apple stores. Unfortunately, not in Apple stores around the world, because I would have bought one. I went to the Irish Apple store, which is only online. We don't have a physical store, and we don't have them. But if you live in the United States, cool new product for you. Finally, let's wrap up this unusual month of Apple news. Bit of a potpourri, really. Only three main stories, but then again, lots and lots of other little stories. We have a few more little stories. These are just quick stories that are noteworthy. They happened in May, but they're not worthy of being a main story. The month that's about to start, June, is Pride Month. And despite DEI falling out of fashion with a certain orange orangutan in the White House... Oops, am I saying too much out loud again? Yeah, it's my show. Give me some leeway. Once an episode, I can just be plain old disrespectful. Given the president swears on social media, I can be disrespectful too, right? I'm only following the lead of the leader of the free world. Okay, I'll stop. Back to gay pride, more important. Not just gay pride, trans pride. All the pride. Anyway, despite DEI falling out of favour in the United States, Apple quietly but determinedly are continuing to do their DEI thing. And they are continuing their long tradition of celebrating Pride Month. And they are continuing to do so with Apple Watch bands. It's a solo sports loop. Sorry, not a sports loop. It's not the solo, not the one that is rubbery, the one that's Velcro-y and actually genuinely adjustable, and you don't have to measure your wrist really carefully and hope for the best. It's white with pastel colours, which is not normal. It's a little too subtle for my normal like. I kind of prefer shouty Pride bands. But I ordered one anyway because I've realised that when I need to be a bit less shouty, when I need to be in more formal occasions, I actually don't have a nice, white, subtle, pastel Apple Watch band for any reason. All of my Apple Watch bands are quite shouty. So I thought, well, why not celebrate Pride with a band that is appropriate for wearing in work and more formal settings? So I did order one. It's never going to be my favourite band, but it's not bad, and it does fill a need for me, so I ordered one. If you don't actually want to buy a piece of hardware, there are screensavers and watch faces and so forth as well. Students and teachers can get educational pricing on the Apple Watch. That's around the world, which is cool. In the United States, there's a teeny tiny sting in the tail. As Cult of Mac reports, Apple cracks down on unverified student discounts in the US. Basically, there are already a few countries where you don't just say, "Hi Apple, I'm a student." Apple actually make you prove it. And the United States is joining that short list of such countries. It didn't look onerous to me. It didn't look unreasonable that if you genuinely are a student, you should be able to meet this validation extremely easily. But it's a wee hurdle that wasn't there until now. On the one hand, you can get a cheaper Apple Watch. On the other hand, you have a tiny bit more work to do to get your cheaper Apple Watch. And your cheaper Macs you've had for years, tiny bit of extra work for all of that too. So anything you do as a student or an educator, you now have to do a little bit of proving. But unless I'm missing something, I don't think it's a big deal. And we will finish with a reminder in case I haven't mentioned it enough times throughout this show. I feel like a struck record about, next week in next month in WWDC. Yeah, it's WWDC next month. Kicks off on the 8th of June. Link in the show notes to Apple's latest press release announcing all the cool things. We've had the winners announced for the 2026 Student Challenge. There is a nice summary over on Mac Stories linked in the show notes. As is always the case with these student challenges, the work these students have been able to produce is amazing. They're just such creative, young, energetic people. And unsurprisingly, given everything else I've said in this show, there's a strong focus on AI, which I think is going to line up as a theme for WWDC. Similarly, similarly in the step of, we don't have a final answer because that comes during WWDC itself, but Apple have announced the finalists for their 2026 Apple Design Awards. If you're sort of interested in maybe expanding your portfolio of apps, they're always worth checking out the various categories. If you're interested in anything that line up with any of Apple's categories, that short list of handful of amazing apps in that category, pretty good starting place for any new acquisitions you might be interested in. So, link in show notes, again, to Mac Stories, who have a nice little summary. And then finally, one of the ways you can watch the keynote at WWDC, and the actual mechanism I use for the simple reason that you don't only get the public keynote, you also get the what I call the real keynote, the State of the Platforms keynote delivered the same afternoon. You get that through the Apple Developer app. That app always gets an update in the lead up to WWDC. It would have been rather embarrassing if this year's update hadn't converted the app to liquid glass. So unsurprisingly, the Apple Developer app has been updated to the liquid glass design. With all that said, let's draw this show to a close. This has been your month's worth of Apple news, and I am anticipating a fun and interesting show next month as I help you all digest everything that happened during and, more importantly, after WWDC as the developers get to react and get to start playing with the beta OSs. I have been your host, Bart Bouchotz. My personal site is at bartb.ie, but more importantly to this show, there are detailed show notes, and I do mean detailed. They contain links to all of the stories that have informed my thinking on this month's Apple News. That is a lot of reading I do every month to prepare myself for these shows. That's kind of why I'm prepared to offer opinions, because they're not hot takes. They're backed up by a lot of reading on my part, and I share with you my reading list in the form of these show notes. So let's-talk.ie. While you're there perusing the show notes, there are also great big buttons for supporting the show. A giant big thank you to everyone who is or has ever supported the show financially. You folks rock. This show is 100% listener supported. you can have my honest opinions for the simple reason that I never have a conflict of interest with sponsors, which don't exist, or advertisers, which don't exist. And it also means that instead of me having podcasting as a cost center where I have to pay for the luxury of putting in all this work to produce these podcasts, I get to run these podcasts break even, which is all I want. I enjoy doing this. I want to share it with the community, but I also want it to not cost me money as well as time and effort. And you folks make that possible, and I am eternally grateful. I know we live in a world where financially supporting podcasts is not something everyone is in a position to do. There are finite amounts of money in everyone's life and near infinite ways to spend it. And, you know, some guy in Ireland yakking on about Apple and photography, not exactly the highest priority thing compared to, oh, rent, electricity, fuel, you know, those kind of things. So if you're not in a position to contribute financially, don't feel bad for one teeny tiny moment. Instead, share news about the show on social media, or better still, in person to friends and family who might be interested. Don't waste time with people who wouldn't be interested, but if there's anyone who might be, share the word, because the more people listen, the more people can choose to support the show. Okay, I've blathered on for long enough. Less-talk.ie, again, for the detailed show notes. My personal site, bartb.ie. Until next month, I've been your host, Bart Bouchotz, and happy computing. Thank you.